Odd Trails is a true paranormal podcast. If you have a story to share, send it to stories@oddtrails.com. Enjoy the show.
Forget facts. Forget logic. Forget everything that seems real. Just trust. Believe.
Ghost Next to My Bed by Version Conscious 7545. Please be advised, this story includes details of a suicide. One day, while I was walking around a large piece of property I had purchased, I noticed a van parked in the back of the woods. I called the number on the van, and the wife of the owner called the police. After a day of panic and confusion, the police found him hanging from a tree in the back corner of the property. He had jumped off a tree stand he built. His wife said he died in the place he loved the most. Fast forward to one morning as the sun was coming up. I heard footsteps running down the hall, which ended at the side of my bed. I have two boys, so this wasn't alarming at first. Except I was actually in the house by myself. I opened my eyes and saw a boy with blonde hair, wearing blue jean overalls, standing next to my bed. I have blonde-haired children, but I suddenly realized that this was not my child. Then all of a sudden, the boy started to vanish from the head down until he was just gone. Being pretty freaked out, I slept with my pistol next to me for the next two nights, as if that would do any good. I later rented the house out for a few years. When I eventually came back to live there, I needed to change my address. I went to the local post office and was talking to the clerk, who knew the address. She said her dad had killed himself on the property. We talked a little, and remembering that unexplainable sighting by my bed years prior, I asked her what her dad was like as a young boy, what he looked like, and what he wore. My jaw dropped when she said he wore blue jean overalls and had blonde hair. I told her about what I saw, and she wasn't surprised. She had experiences of her own that involved her deceased dad as well. Even my son, before I ever saw or mentioned the boy next to my bed, would always talk about a little blonde-haired boy. I thought he was just making up a friend, you know, like how kids do. I still haven't told my kids about my experience, but after finding out who the ghost likely was, I was never afraid of another encounter if it happened. I'd often hear noises. And sometimes doors that were open when I walked by were somehow completely shut the next time I saw them. You can say what you want, but I'm certain the man who died on my property returned as a boy from when he used to enjoy the land my house is on, reliving the times he was the happiest. He has since moved on, or at least I haven't heard or seen anything out of the ordinary for years now. I hope he found peace.
Cutting Firewood in the Mountains of Central Idaho by Clyde, 2003. The following story contains some graphic detail involving an animal. Listener discretion is advised. In many rural areas of the American Midwest, cutting firewood in national forests is a necessary chore if you want a warm house through the summer. Our home in mountainous central Idaho was no exception. It was normal for my dad to pick me and my brothers up after school and head to the mountains for an afternoon of firewood gathering. My dad would cut down the dead trees and then chop them into chunks, while my brothers and I had the task of rolling the wood to the truck and loading it. We would continue this assembly line process until we had a whole truckload of wood, which we usually accomplished before nightfall. Whenever we were done, we would be hot, sweaty, and exhausted as we piled into the truck and made our way back down the mountain. At home the next day, we would unload and split the wood to stack it into neat little rows. This process was repeated until we had a winter's worth of fuel for our house and our grandma's cabin. The excess would go to our elderly neighbors. On this particular afternoon, we decided to try a different logging road on the other side of the valley. This was well outside our familiar logging area. There was no real reason for the change. My dad said he just wanted a change of scenery. This logging road hadn't been maintained in some time, so there were large rocks and fallen branches littering the path. My brothers and I had to walk out in front of the truck, pushing rocks and wood out of the way as my dad lurched up the switchbacks. Yard by yard, we slowly made our way up the mountain. That hike was physically brutal. As we ascended the mountain and got further into the trees, this odd feeling started to set in. I wasn't sure if it was the exhaustion from the hike or something more, but there was an electricity in the air, like the whole mountain was buzzing at a wavelength just below my senses. In some weird way, it felt like the mountain knew that we were there and it was not welcoming us. I wanted to say something to my brothers, but before I even opened my mouth, my younger brother said, "Does anyone feel like we're not welcome here?" My older brother and I stopped in our tracks and looked back at him. Both of us nodded in agreement. This moment was broken by my dad honking and motioning for us to continue clearing the path. Reluctantly, we pushed forward to a small clearing in the woods where we finally stopped the truck. My dad, oblivious to our apprehension, or simply choosing to ignore it, grabbed his saw and went to work. As the wood was falling, my brothers and I loaded the truck, but I couldn't shake this ominous feeling enveloping me like a dark shroud. I noticed my brothers were taking occasional glances over their shoulders as we worked. Everyone, except my dad, it seemed, was on edge. We were still working as the sun nestled down into the trees and twilight began to set in. As the light drained from the sky, my anxiety only intensified. It wasn't until my dad unexpectedly told us to load up that a wave of relief flooded over me. I could see the tension in my brothers melt away as well. But the truck wasn't fully loaded. This was an oddity, as getting a half load was a waste, according to my dad. This was especially odd since we would sometimes continue working into the dark just to make sure that the truck was full. But tonight, my dad seemed eager to wrap things up and head home. So with everything loaded, we started down the road. Although dead tired, everyone seemed to be in a much lighter mood since we were leaving. We were chatting and cracking jokes, just trying to blow off steam from the tension that we all felt that afternoon. We were almost out of the tree line and into the valley desert, but when going down the switchbacks, we had to be careful, especially with a load, even if it was just a half load. Then, suddenly, a brown blur jumped up from the downslope of the switchback that we were going down. "Shit!" my dad exclaimed as he slammed on the brakes. Loaded with wood, and traveling downhill, there was no way to avoid smashing into the blur, and after hitting it, the truck finally grinded to a standstill, The four of us peered through the windshield. Nobody said a word. Illuminated by the yellow glow of our headlights was the crumpled up body of a deer. Grumbling and cursing the deer's existence, my dad got out of the truck to investigate. Doing as they were told, my brothers stayed put in the truck. I didn't listen, though. I got out and followed close behind my dad. The truck was fine. We hadn't been traveling that fast when we smacked into the deer. There was only some hair and blood on the grill guard. Hitting a deer wasn't that unusual out here, as the mountains were full of them. But what was unusual was that the deer dashed out in front of us so quickly. At faster speeds, deer could still be upright and sprint away to die in the woods after a collision like that. They generally have one last burst of adrenaline, but this one fell over like a rag doll. Before even approaching the carcass, a deep, foul smell hit us. Deer smell bad when they're alive, but this was a whole other level. It was the smell of decay and rot. My stomach began to turn as we got closer. My nostrils were burning. Coming up on the deer, we saw that it was clearly dead. Really, really dead. The stench was so overwhelming that my eyes were watering. The body was a true horror scene. The deer's eyes were gone, replaced with sunken, hollow holes, as if to overcompensate for their absence. The tongue was swollen and black as coal. It was so swollen that it could not be contained, so it hung out of the side of its mouth. The underbelly was split open with the entrails spilling into the dirt. In the dim headlights, it looked as though the deer's fur and viscera were moving, wiggling almost. Holding my breath, I bent down for a closer look and my heart stopped. The deer, inside and out, was covered in maggots. It was dead all right, but our truck did not kill it. It had been dead for days, if not weeks. I backed away, retching, and the electric anxiety came screeching back. My dad was always the quiet, stoic type, but right now, even in the dim headlights of the truck, I could see the abject horror in his face. His gaze wasn't on the deer, but focused down the mountain. Poorly masking the fear in his voice, he firmly told me to get back into the truck. I obeyed without objection. As I grabbed the door handle, we heard a loud shriek coming out of the trees. Branches were shattering and breaking. We heard the ground crunching, indicating that something was heading up the slope towards us. I slammed my door closed just as my dad reached the truck. Before he even shut the door, he pressed on the accelerator. The truck launched forward, sending us sailing over the deer carcass and racing downhill. With all of my and my brothers yelling, it was hard to tell if the shrieking was following us. Before we knew it, our truck popped out of the tree line and into the desert sagebrush. Once we were out of the woods, everything quieted down. We were left with only the rumble of the engine and wind passing through the opened windows. Pulling into our property was the next time that the truck came to a stop. Once we were there, we briefly sat in silence. No one moved to leave the truck. Everyone then burst out, talking all at once. We all had questions. What was the shrieking? What was coming towards us? How does a dead deer jump uphill in front of a truck? My dad shook his head and motioned for us to settle down. That deer was dead when we hit it, he explained. It did not jump out in front of us. It was thrown at us. My brothers and I stared at him as he admitted that all day up on that mountain, he felt uneasy. He didn't want to worry us boys, so he kept it to himself. He described the feeling, saying that it felt like he walked into a stranger's living room while they were asleep upstairs. That feeling never left him, and as twilight came, he caught a shadow out of the corner of his eye, and not far into the woods, he saw figures moving from tree to tree. He couldn't focus on them long enough to get a good look before they ducked behind the trees. My stomach dropped as he said all of this. but he wanted to keep his composure as he hurried us into the truck to leave. It was after hitting the deer and discovering that it was long dead that my dad pieced together what was happening. Something threw that deer at us to get us to stop. Before the shrieking began, he could hear something moving in the darkness beyond the road. It was a trap. Running back to the truck could have started an ambush or triggered a prey drive. So that's why he stayed calm, as he firmly told me that we needed to walk back to the truck. The second we were inside, we drove that truck downhill with no intention of stopping for anyone or anything. That feeling of electricity didn't disappear until we hit the county highway. My brothers and I never saw anything as we drove away, but those screams from the forest will never leave my mind. We didn't gather firewood for the rest of the season after that. For the first time in his life, my dad just brought what we needed. And although we started to gather wood again the next season, we've never, ever been back up to that particular mountain. The Forest Service has since permanently closed and reclaimed that road, so the only way back up to those roads is a long hike. One that I'll never be interested in taking ever again. Whatever was on that mountain, whatever threw that deer carcass at us, whatever chased us out of the woods, it did not want us there. It wanted us gone, or worse, it wanted us dead. I totally get the struggle of trying to get rid of a bad habit. It can feel like you're battling an entire army by yourself, and it makes even the simplest daily tasks feel like daunting challenges. I've been there. However, life is about perseverance. It's about transformation and betterment. Fume offers a way to transform your bad habit into something healthier and far more enjoyable. Fume is an innovative, award-winning flavored air device that does just that. Instead of vapor, Fume uses flavored air. Instead of electronics, Fume is completely natural, and instead of harmful chemicals, Fume uses delicious flavors. You get it. Instead of bad, Fume is good. It's a habit that you're free to enjoy, and it makes replacing your bad habit easy. Your Fume comes with an adjustable airflow dial and is designed with movable parts and magnets for fidgeting, giving your fingers a lot to do, which is helpful for de-stressing and anxiety while you're breaking the habit. Initially, I wasn't exactly sure of what to expect, but I was really impressed by both the quality and the craftsmanship, as it was beautifully crafted with real wood. And now, Fume has just released a magnetic stand for your Fume, so there's no more losing it around the house. It's built with fidgeting in mind. You can like spin the Fume around on it. It's cool. Start your year off with the good habit by going to tryfume.com/trails and getting the journey pack today. Fume is giving listeners of the show 10% off when they use our code TRAILS to help make starting the good habit that much easier. Again, get 10% off when you use our code TRAILS at tryfume.com/trails. Now back to the show.
My Parents' House is Haunted by J.K. Posts. My parents' house is haunted, and it permanently damaged me. It is also affecting other inhabitants of the house. So, some data on the house. It was built by a rich, noble family in 1674 in a little village in northern Germany as part of a bigger estate. It was supposed to house the servants, workers, gardeners, etc. Sadly, the construction of the main building was never finished, as money ran out. So after a few years, what had been built was sold to another family, and another, and so on. The father of the last family that owned it was very rich and had a lot of money in America. Then 1928 happened and, well, he shot himself in the head to not dishonor his family. The house was never the same after that. After World War II, the house was taken over by the East German government and repurposed. It housed a kindergarten, a shop, and a communal government. After Germany's reunification, it was left empty. Then, in 2001, my parents bought it for very cheap because, well, it was in shambles. It needed a lot of work done. My parents took on the challenge and made this house into a home. I had a great childhood there, most of the time at least. And my sister moved back in with my parents because there was so much room. She's going to inherit it someday, so it'll stay in the family. It all sounds like a happily ever after story, but not all people under that roof are alive. It started when I was around 5 or 6. I was sleeping alone in my parents' bed, when suddenly, it started shaking. I thought to myself, this isn't real, the earth must be shaking. Imagine my surprise when I looked around the room and down the bed and saw it floating around 4 centimeters off the ground. I jumped off and ran to my parents, but as you can imagine, the bed was back to normal when I showed them. Another day, I was going into a room where a big goat head hung on one of the walls. It's made out of clay and always kind of creeped me out, because it follows you with its eyes. I will never forget this day. It was broad daylight, and it spoke to me. It called out to me and said, in German, "Hello. Hello, little boy. Come here." That scared the hell out of me, and I ran away. The head is still hanging there for some reason, and I've had multiple encounters with it. Sometimes its eyes look somewhere else and then move to look at you. It never spoke again, though. When I was around 10, a buddy and I took pictures for fun with an old camera. We captured white smoke coming out of the chimneys, even though none of the ovens were lit. This was in high summer. I've heard voices multiple times in certain rooms of the house between these major events. Every time I walked into the house at night, it felt like something was following me. Sometimes something crept up to me and I had to run away. It wasn't pleasant. And of course, all different kinds of sounds. Footsteps, doors slamming and drawers opening on their own. The whole shebang. I was 12 when I first saw him. I didn't sleep very well that night, so I stood up from my bed and wanted to go to my parents. When I took my first step, I felt so cold, and the room was darker than ever before. I turned on my light, but it didn't flood the room as usual. I went to the door that led to my parents' room and opened it, but decided to have one last look back. I wish I didn't. I saw him coming out of the wall, a dark figure that looked like a Dementor from Harry Potter. He had long, tree-like fingers. He reached after me and opened his mouth. I ran for my life and slept with my parents that night. I didn't even know anything about Harry Potter at that time, and it wasn't something from my imagination. I think it was the man who killed himself in the house. Years later, when I was 16 years old, I was talking to an ex on the phone. I was telling her the story about the dark figure. Suddenly, the room filled with heavy breathing, and my phone started to stutter. It seems he didn't like what I said. We moved into another part of the house years later, and I got a new room. My parents' room wasn't renovated at the time, so I got to move in before them. One night, I woke up from a good sleep, sat up and looked at my door. My door has two blurred windows installed at the top. I saw multiple pairs of eyes staring down at me. Then it began. Something was shaking the door and hammering like crazy. At this time, I had become a Norse pagan and had prepped the door with runes. I began praying to the gods. I stood up and shouted at the door, "Go away! It's just me, you idiot!" And it stopped. It felt like the ghost took me for an intruder, but realized he was mistaken. My sister's boyfriend has also seen the dark figure. Of course, he moved in later than all of us, so he wasn't used to it. He has seen him in the barn and walk past windows and doors, even in daylight. We've all seen him, though. He's part of the house. We all know he's there. No one doubts it. And for as long as I can remember, I've seen eyes everywhere in the house. They were always either looking at me or at each other. When there were many eyes, the energy was really bad, and it meant something was about to happen. I moved out about a year and a half ago. My life has never been better. I don't see weird stuff anymore, anywhere. The building I live in now is clean, and I've saged my flat. This could all be in my head. Maybe I am mentally ill. I don't know, but it's not affecting me negatively right now. I lived part-time in a boarding school for 5 years. When I was there, I never saw anything. Only when I was in my former house or at cemeteries. Should I see a therapist about this? Do you think my parents should do something about the dark figure? Thank you for listening.
The Abandoned House by Ai Mochi. I am deaf, but I can speak and sign. I was 15 when this happened. Growing up, there was an old house next to my aunt, an old abandoned two-story house with a basement. There was a torn wire fence surrounding the grounds, so my cousin and I loved to slip through the fence and explore. This house bordered my aunt's land, which reached the end of the woods. Typically, my cousin and I would just explore the land outside of the house, but one day, we decided to check out the inside of this house. It didn't have a back door. We entered through the opening where the back door once was, and we walked into the living room. It was filled with furniture, old furniture. It was clear that someone just walked out and left suddenly, without taking any of their things with them. My 12-year-old cousin quickly grew afraid since it was dark, but I was determined to explore some more, so I led the way. Before we made our way up the stairs, we checked if the steps were safe by using a large, heavy rock to make sure that it would hold. Once we got to the top, we noticed that the hall was empty, and there were 3 rooms and 1 bathroom up there. I grabbed my cousin's hand and decided that we should check out the room that we were closest to. This first room was clean, almost as if no one had ever touched it. The window had no dust on it. It was so clean, it felt like I was looking at a brand new house. Then we moved on to the second room, which was a complete contrast to the first room. It was dirty, the walls were rotting. There was a bed in the middle of the room and it was covered in leaves. There were dark brown stains on the mattress, and the bed frame was falling apart. We moved to the third room, and there, as we were standing in the doorway of the third room, we felt very uneasy. I felt almost as if somebody were watching us. It gave me the immediate urge to throw up for some reason. My cousin started complaining of a rotting smell that permeated out of nowhere. It wasn't there before, so my instinct told me that we should just turn around and go. Just as we did turn around, there was a black transparent figure in a wheelchair in the first room that was previously occupied. The figure was just staring at us. My cousin froze in place as I signed to him that someone was at the end of the hall watching us. Then, a voice popped up in my head, and it said, "Under the cross." Horrified, I grabbed my cousin and ran out. As we ran out of the opening in the back of the house, we saw a cross on the ground outside of the back entrance. My cousin, who is very germophobic, makes us wear gloves when we explore. I was especially thankful that he had us wear them on this day, since it gave me the confidence to gently pick up the cross. I didn't see anything under it, so I was confused by what it meant. I put the cross back, and we went back to my aunt's after that. We arrived at my aunt's porch, where we explained what happened to my uncle. He decided to go and check it out because he knew the land like the back of his hand. He grabbed his shovel and dug where the cross was. He dug up a cardboard box. It contained the remains of a cat wrapped in this beautiful pink blanket that I recognized as part of a bed set that I saw upstairs in the old house. The box had a note, artificial flowers, and a spell jar surrounding the cat. My uncle, who was a very kind man, decided to grab a wooden box from the shed. He cleaned it out before placing the cat and its items in the box to ensure that the cat would be comfortable in the afterlife. He read the note and told me that he found out the cat's name, which was Snow. My uncle buried the cat again using a special tool to engrave the name of the cat on the cross. After my uncle asked his neighbor about the cat, he found that Snow just appeared and hung around the house ever since it was abandoned. Nobody was sure when Snow passed or who buried Snow outside of the house. The abandoned house was eventually torn down, but my family still sees a ghostly-looking white cat hanging around the property, and my cousin still sees that dark figure in the wheelchair hanging around the woods.
My Grandfather's Ghost Said Hi by Chase. My story is a short one, and not as scary as some of the other ones you guys share, but hopefully you'll like it. I figured the show could use a positive paranormal interaction. Anyway, back in the summer of 2020, my grandfather passed away in his home. After the funeral, his house just sat empty. However, the mail still always came, so it was up to me and my siblings to stop by and grab it, and bring it home to my dad. One night, I was leaving my girlfriend's house who lived out of town, and on the way back to my house, I stopped by to grab the mail. I really had to pee, so I decided to use the bathroom at my grandpa's house. I got there at around 10 p.m., so it was pretty dark out. I opened the door and looked over at the chair my grandpa would always sit in. Suddenly, a wave of emotion rushed through me, and I felt like crying. But I toughened up and decided to take care of business instead. I figured I'd better hurry since it was getting late. So I ran up the stairs and used the bathroom. But when I came back down, I noticed that the TV in front of his chair had somehow turned on. A Western movie was playing, just like the ones my grandpa always used to watch. I was confused and a little scared, but I looked over at his chair and said, "Goodbye, Grandpa. I love you. And as soon as I said that, the TV shut off all on its own. I was dumbfounded and stunned by what had just happened, but I wasn't scared anymore. Instead, I was actually happy. Happy to know my grandfather was still hanging around. I felt that was his way of letting me know he's still here for his family.
That live stream for Let's Not Meet on Saturday was a ton of fun. I really need to video myself more often telling stories because I feel like I make less mistakes somehow.
Same thing for the show that we did in Long Beach.
Yeah.
I don't remember any mishaps in front of the crowd.
No.
I just hate seeing my own face. I already have to listen to my own voice every day for a living, but
yeah,
I know what you mean. It's performance under pressure or something.
Yeah, that's got to be it. I disassociate a little bit, and I think it helps me from overthinking literally every syllable like I normally do.
Yeah.
But getting into a flow state of sorts kind of just helps me roll with it.
Yeah, I usually made less mistakes playing in a band than I did practicing at home by myself when it came to music. So I think it's similar.
Yeah, the audience effect is definitely real.
Yeah.
Well, it was an honor. That was fun.
Yeah, it was. We got to start doing something together regularly, even if it's just chatting and playing video games.
Oh, yeah. I'm way down. We do that anyway throughout the week, and people seem to like hearing us talk about whatever, so I think that'd be like the perfect format for that. Plus, we wouldn't have to make some sort of effort to stay on topic.
Yeah. Well, we'll set the wheels in motion then.
Consider them set. On the topic of topics, what do you think about the blonde boy in the overalls?
I'm assuming you're referring to the ghost next to my bed story. I'm kind of torn.
Yeah, was that the guy who died on the property? The postal worker's dad?
I don't know exactly where the story took place, but overalls aren't generally something you see every day unless you're like in an R&B group from the 90s. It seems fairly specific though. Plus, the blonde hair.
Yeah, hearing the postal worker confirm what her dad looked like, how she had her own experiences after he passed, and then, of course, confirming that he died on the author's property. I was fairly convinced after that. But then there's the triple whammy.
The author's son.
Bingo, baby. We've got our third witness.
Yeah. And we know that the kid wasn't just like, oh, I saw him too.
Right, yeah. He mentioned that. He never told his son about seeing him, but all the indicators line up. Let's just pretend that it isn't the postal worker's dad. At the very least, the author's son still saw the same blonde-haired boy on the property, so it's pretty neat either way.
Yeah, it definitely is. I'm still pretty sold on it being the dad, though.
Yeah, I am too. I liked that he appeared as a child, because I always wondered how that whole thing works when spirits manifest in physical form, human form. Do we get to choose?
Mm-hmm.
Since we mentioned video games, I'm just going to roll with a character selection analogy.
Yeah, I think I see where you're going with this.
Yeah.
Like, once we make it to, quote unquote, the other side, or in the case of sightings on Earth, some sort of middle stage, do we punch in our age or something and that's what we get to keep forever? Do we get to change it on a whim?
Yeah, I don't know. Or if there's even a choice at all. Maybe the powers that be use some metaphysical AI on steroids or something, and it just knows what stage we need to be at when that time comes.
Yeah, I'm not eager to find out, but I do look forward to having those answers when it's my time.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. I think about death a lot, for better or worse, and I always picture myself letting out a sigh of relief or even doing some sort of happy dance during that hopeful moment where I realize I'm dead but still have consciousness in some form of afterlife.
Yeah, I think about that too. Like, oh, good, I can finally just relax and exist. No stressors or annoying commitments.
Yeah, yeah. Best of all, time and money won't be some dwindling resource we have to spend so much energy managing and worrying about.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. No sense in sweating it.
Yeah.
But you know what did have me sweating? That Idaho story.
Yeah. Clyde did a really good job at writing down their experience. Their dad said that he, quote, felt like they had walked into a stranger's living room while they were asleep upstairs when they went into the woods, and that just gave me chills.
Yeah, it's normal to be scared as a kid, of course, and you always look to your dad to be the strong one and not show any kind of fear.
Mm-hmm.
So it's weird when you get older and learn that adults are even more terrified of certain situations than their kids are.
Yeah.
But seeing that fear in your dad, of all people, after going through something like that has to be pretty traumatic, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've ever seen my dad truly scared, and it's hard to even think about because it means things would have really had to hit the fan for him to feel that way. Seeing any of your parents frightened or powerless just rips away your own sense of security at any age.
Yeah, and regular adult life is terrifying. Throw in a skinwalker or wendigo or whatever the hell that thing was, and I don't think I could ever get over it. I'd have nightmares forever.
Yeah. Yet another banger cryptid story.
Yeah, yeah. And we complained about not getting enough of these kinds of stories on the podcast, and now we've had them back to back, these woodland cryptids.
Mm-hmm. Ask and ye shall receive thy cryptid.
Odd Trails Bible, chapter 4, verse 20.
Page 69. I'd definitely buy an Odd Trails Bible. The Ford could just be a transcript of our first 100 outro chats or something.
Yeah. I imagine it being like the Junior Woodchuck guidebook from DuckTales.
Oh, yeah. I've always wanted that book. Seemed like it had every solution to whatever wacky situation those dirty nephews got in the... dirty nephews. You know, whatever wacky situation those nephew ducklings got themselves into.
Yeah.
They don't have to be dirty.
The glory days of cartoons, man.
Yeah, I know, I know. We got to be careful, though. I could see us going on another one of those grumpy, pretentious rants we always do about how we miss our childhoods and the way things were back in our day.
Yeah, I catch myself doing that more and more. I've got to stop.
Yeah, there's no sense in complaining about something we have no control over. It just is what it is. I think we're happy for the memories, but dwelling on the time passing just makes me feel sad and left feeling kind of angry and bitter for no rational reason at all. Like, there's somebody to blame for time passing and there's something I could have done about it, but here's to hoping we don't end up like our grandpas and lecture tomorrow's youth about the value of hard work.
Yeah, it's a circle of life.
Amen.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much, everybody, for listening. We appreciate every one of you. If you have a story to share, make sure you send it in to stories@oddtrails.com so you can hear it on the show. And if you want to get ad-free versions of all of our episodes at a higher bitrate, you can go to patreon.com/oddtrails and sign up to support the show today. All of the stories you heard this week were narrated and produced with the permission of their respective authors. Make sure you check out the new episodes of my other podcasts like Let's Not Meet. We did a live episode this weekend, which we referred to in our outro here, where Brandon came on the show and did a true horror story. That was interesting. And make sure you check out the other shows like Old Time Radio Cast and Welcome to Paradise It Sucks, all at crypticcountypodcasts.com. Everyone, stay safe.
Peace out.
Don't let the ghosts and the ghouls disturb you, darling.